All right, welcome to Card Knock Life. I'm Corey. He's Daryl.
Yo.
And we are back at you with some more Magic the Gathering news and information. We're going to jump right in this week. We've got something from all the way back when, last week Thursday, there was like some sort of leak. We're gonna save the Archenemy Nico Boloss. I'm sorry. What is this called? Hour of Devastation. That's what I'm trying to say. A couple of cards spoiled from that set a month and a half before the planned spoiler season. And I'm beginning to think that this is kind of like on purpose, would you say?
Specifically this card? Absolutely.
Yeah. This is like... Well, I don't know. I mean, so we'll get to it in a moment here, but we're talking about Nico Boloss, the card. The French Wizards website basically put out on accident a video promoting this standard challenge or standard showdown or something. And this video flashed three cards from the upcoming set way, way early and way in advance of when the spoiler season is supposed to happen. So we've got Nico Boloss, we've got Samut the Tested, and we've got Bantu's Last Reckoning. And I'm sure you've seen them by now, because they've been out for about a week by now, half a week. But we're going to talk about them and kind of where they stand in the midst of Standard, and also potentially Modern, for that matter. But let's start with Nico Boloss here. We've got four blue, black, red. Obviously, it's a Planeswalker. That's Nico Boloss, the God Pharaoh. He's got four abilities, like every good God Pharaoh should. Plus two. By the way, he starts with seven loyalty. Plus two, and I'm going to try my best to read this. I'm going to squint. It's awfully blurry.
I can read it.
Go ahead.
I can read it. Plus two, target opponent exiles cards from the top of his or her library until he or she exiles a non-land card. Until end of turn, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost. So you basically draw one of your opponent's cards.
Yeah, so let's stop right there. Let's just evaluate this first ability, because right now this to me feels like... like, we've got another Aetherworks Marvel situation on our hands, doesn't it? Like, it's almost like Aetherworks Marveling your opponent.
It is, exactly. In fact, Aetherworks Marveling your opponent. Instead of the top six, though, you just get the first one. But if your opponent happens to play something like Ulamog, and you're just like, all right, Bolas, you. Oh, and Ulamog. Boop your permanence. Go. And then they're just dead to their own Ulamog.
Yeah, so fun, right? We've got plenty of these like really, really big splashy effects going on in Standard right now, and
yeah,
I don't know if this seven casting cost is going to be a huge barrier for us, and three colors at that, but I guess that remains to be seen.
I mean, I'm sure you could splash this in Team or Aetherworks and be just fine with it. Yeah. You play a tune with Aether, so like a swamp is not unreasonable.
Now, we do have two banned and restricted updates before this card is even released.
Oh man, when they showed this card, I was like, well, that's the banning of Aetherworks Marvel right there. Like,
yeah. I mean, there's more to talk about on this one, but right there with that plus two ability, I think that's the most, like, significant one in terms of, like, if you're going to Aetherworks Marvel, this is the one that I'm most concerned about. Maybe the minus four that we're going to talk about in a second, too, but... I'm still trying to compare this effect to, like, would I rather have an Ulamog? I think I would. I think I'd rather
have an Ulamog. The answer is I'd always rather have an Ulamog. Like, you would have to print something really impressive to make me not want to have Ulamog. Like Emrakul.
But you're going to say you want both.
But yeah, I want Ulamog, I want Bolas, I want Chandra Flamecaller, I want it all.
Yeah. Alright, cool. So let's go on. The next one. Plus one. Each opponent exiles two cards from his or her hand. It's pretty strong. Pretty strong for a plus one.
That's not a debatably strong plus one. Obviously not any good when your opponent's in top deck mode, but like, if it's early in the game and you marvel into this guy, you're just like, alright, your hand, go.
But the good news is it's not like one of those abilities where it says like up to one opponent like does this thing so that you can just take it up for fun, because there's a plus two that you can always do and always get value out of. So it's like if you really just want to grow your Nico Boloss, you're gonna be doing the plus two. So you do the plus one when your opponent has a bunch of cards in their hand and you wanna just like, you know, get them into top deck mode.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyways, minus four.
Like everything on this is worth noting. It's all about exiling, so that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, yeah.
Minus four. Nico Boloss, God Pharaoh, deals seven damage to target opponent or creature and opponent controls. Yeah. Wow. So that can kill an opposing Nico Bolas if it hasn't been activated yet. I don't know. That's probably not relevant.
But nope.
It is relevant that it's 7. That's huge.
I figure you're just looking at something like +2 Nico Bolas, -4, -4, deal 14 to your opponent, and I figure out how to do 6.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that seems pretty strong.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. Cool. And then last but not least, the ultimate, -12, exile each non-land permanent your opponent's control. Does it say opponents with an S?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So obviously multiplayer pointed benefit there.
I mean, like, I don't think this ultimate is good.
Yeah.
Like, that, like, Dark Salvation, like, I was expecting an ultimate that was way better, like...
Yeah.
With a card like Dark Salvation putting counters on this guy, I was expecting there to be, like, a lot more to it than just, like, meh, Ugin you. Like, okay, yeah, I was Ugined.
Wait, what is Dark Salvation? I'm thinking of Dark Petition. What's Dark Salvation?
It's 2 blue, black, red. Target opponent discards a card and sacrifices a creature, and then you do the opposite, I think?
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
It's like something like that.
That's the card from the previous set that basically heralded.
Yeah, and then it says if you have a Bolas plane, when you play a Bolas plane, you can exile it to add a loyalty.
Uh-huh. Oh, right, because it, yeah. So the benefit of that is you can then -4 it twice in a row.
Yeah, but it's not Dark Salvation. I'm sorry.
I know what you're talking about. It's the 5 mana spell that is in Nico Bolas colors and.
So
what's the significance of that? The adding an extra counter to this guy? It, probably not much. Like,
I mean, it lets you hit him with bang bang on the ultimate.
The
I guess
ultimate in 2 turns. Yeah,
or no, ultimate's in 1 turn, and it like lets you go double -4.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. I mean, I guess for that reason though, it probably can't be too strong, right? Because then you'd have that in standard.
Yeah.
So, that's fine. I mean, every ability is pretty damn powerful, so I don't think that you need to have, like, a really explosive ultimate, because you basically just win the game for casting the guy in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty true. You're giving me a minute, I'm trying to...
Trying to function that card?
Yeah. Because this is killing me right now.
Nah, it doesn't matter what it's called. No one's going to play
it. I mean, it does.
You think it's going to get played with this guy? I mean, obviously, we're missing a lot of cards in this set.
People are going to try it.
Yeah. It's too fun not to try, but... Man, this reminds me of the days of, like, the Vivid Lands and, like, the Reflecting Pool when we were playing the 5-color control in Standard and we had, like, Cruel Control.
Oh, baby. Don't bring me back to a time of which I was fond. When four flash walls were like the nut.
Plume Veil. Yeah, that's a cool card. Anyways, while you're looking for that, we're gonna go on to the next card. Significantly less flashy. Significantly less flashy, I should say. Samet the Tested, 2 red green, yet another 2 red green planeswalker. We have quite a few of those. And it's a 4 loyalty planeswalker, +1, up to 1 target creature gains double strike until end of turn.
Well, that's going to my EDH, but okay.
Yeah. -2, Samet the Tested deals 2 damage divided as you choose among 1 or 2 target creatures and or players.
That's pretty terrible.
It's pretty terrible. And then -7, search your library for up to 2 creatures and or planeswalkers, put them onto the battlefield, and shuffle your library.
No.
Yeah, this one is very concerning to me. I think it's bad, but
it's bad.
Obviously ultimate is really, really good, but I just don't see ever getting to that ultimate.
Nope. So, the spell we were talking about was Dark Imitations. Each player, each opponent sacrifices a creature or planeswalker, then discards a card. You return a creature or planeswalker from your graveyard to your hand, then draw a card. When you cast a Bolas planeswalker spell, exile Dark Imitations from your graveyard. That planeswalker enters the battlefield with an additional loyalty counter on it.
Dark Imitations?
Yeah. Dark Oh, no. Dark Intimations. I-N-T-I-M-A-T-I-M-S. Okay.
Right, I was going to say, what does that mean?
Dark Intimidations. Alright, I got nothing on that one, man.
Damn it, we'll get it. Alright, anyways, back to Salmon. We'll talk about how bad this card is. First of all, it comes into play. 4 mana for 4 loyalty planeswalker isn't bad, right? So that's not,
yeah,
that's not
terrible. So yeah, you're ulting in 3 turns, but Salmon, like, plus 1, really solid in your aggro deck. You know, if there's a good 3 drop you can plus on, like, Ronus. Ronus being a 10-10 double striker is pretty solid.
Yeah, I feel like this card was, like, maybe originally, like, a 3-mana planeswalker that had to get, like, nerfed in development. Or, like, maybe it was a 4-mana planeswalker that, like, the second ability was, like, 3 damage, or it was, like, a minus 1, it had to get changed in development. Like, yeah, something about it just feels like it got nerfed a little too far.
Something went all sorts of wrong here. Like,
I'll bet it was the mana cost. I'll bet it wasn't a 4-mana planeswalker all along, because Arlancourt already is exactly the same mana cost, and Arlancourt's also in standard right now.
Yeah.
No, I realize that probably wasn't the plan originally because of the standard rotation being extended.
Yeah.
But it is strange that we have 2 of the same color color scheme planeswalkers so close together.
Yeah, but the plus is good in your aggro decks, but that's it. The minus is good in your never decks.
Well, yeah, in standard, it's just not really relevant right now. There are not a lot of one toughness creatures that are getting played.
Nope.
In a standard where people are playing, like, mana dorks, like, yeah, that would be pretty legit, but...
Oh, yeah, if there was, like, Llanowar Elves, jeez, this card would be real solid.
And then, turn 4, it's so slow, and then you're left with a guy that's got 2 loyalty. It's just so
that
capable.
That dies to other Llanowar Elves? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this card. Can we move on?
Yeah, we can. I just feel like there's something here. Saffron Olive brought up something with that guy and basically said that it's ridiculous in doubling season planeswalker decks. Because sure, it comes into play, it ultimates right away, and it puts out 2 more planeswalkers. Right? So that's crazy. Right. Basically win the game there.
So here's the thing. Why don't you just play new Bolas in that deck too? So you ultimate Samet, you get new Bolas, and your opponent is on board.
Yeah, you might as well. You can play 1 new Bolas. You can play, you can play just about any planeswalker you want in there as a 1-of then.
Yeah.
So, there's the benefit. But other than that, like, if you don't have in that exact deck, like, if you don't have a doubling season, this card just does jack shit for you.
hot garbage. Yeah. What are you going to target your Sylvan Caryatid in?
Your Noble Hierarch is going to get double strike until end of turn.
Yeah, got him.
The next one's worth talking about, though. Bantu's Last Reckoning, 1 black for destroy all creatures. Lands you control don't untap during your next untap step. We finally got it. A 3 mana wrath. This is sorcery, by the way.
Yeah.
That's your reaction, really? I thought you'd be more excited about this.
Yeah, it's not that I don't like it. It's just really hard to evaluate how good it is.
Okay.
So, like, you're right. 1 black, destroy all creatures. Never been printed on a card. And so if it was just literally 1 black, destroy all creatures, that would be insane.
Yes.
Like, so there has to be a drawback. This drawback makes sense. So, it's sort of like the 1 blue time warp that doesn't let you have an untap step.
Yeah, that card never got played, really.
No, Savor of the Moment did not see much play. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to see Legacy play. Because it's not better than Toxic Deluge.
No, it's not.
But Modern? Or standard, I certainly think it has some legs. I think it's better in modern because you can play it in like a Tezzeret deck and use like artifact ramp to let you have mana. So if you have like talismans and signets, you can Bantu's Last Reckoning off of signets, and your land's not untapping doesn't matter.
Here's where this really shines, though. Like, think about it this way. All right, so in some cases, like playing this on turn 3 because you just want to survive against a deck where you're really getting aggressively beat with creatures is okay because you just need to do that to like stay alive, right? But in like the right case, you're playing this when you are like, you know, you're a control deck and you're like successfully controlling the board already. It's not turn three. You know, it's later in the game when you can actually catch like, you know, four or five creatures off of it. Best case scenario. And if that's the case, hopefully, and I'm thinking like probably more like standard here. Hopefully you can resolve a Planeswalker at that point, like say a Gideon or a Liliana, or, and I'm talking like maybe five mana Liliana.
Sure.
And if you're tapping out for this card and then you can't untap the next turn, it doesn't, you're basically getting a turn out of your Planeswalkers because you're able to activate that Planeswalker for that turn anyway.
You're getting some major
advantage that way.
Well, that was the kind of the original deck, like when I talked about Saber the Moment. That was when the lower one Planeswalkers first came out, and that's what everyone did. They're like, oh my god, you play like Garrick and Jace and Liliana, and you didn't play so much Johnny or Chandra because they were kind of meh.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you play like Garrick, Jace, and Liliana, and it's like, Saber the Moment, untap, discard a card, I'll draw a card, make a beast, yeah, go! And like, that was a big deal. But now, like, to cast Time Walk, or to just, like, have a situation where your lands don't untap, you have to be getting a lot of advantage. And so, my first thought would be, well, you can get a whole shit ton of advantage when your lands don't untap if you had creatures in play.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
This kind of eliminates the creatures in play portion of the show. So, it plays well in, like, a green-black deck. Because you can have Ronus in play and have vehicles. And so you can like Bantu's Last Reckoning, untap on your turn and like hit him with an Aether Sphere Harvester or a Cultivator's Caravan, not so much a Smuggler's Copter, a Heart of Kirin, you know, whatever vehicle you'd like to hit them in the face with and sort of move on with your day. But unfortunately,
Heart of Kirin curves pretty well into this, right?
Yeah, Heart of Kirin into this. But then you don't have a creature for it is the problem. So, like, that's why you want, like, gods. So that, like, you can have your god in play, wrath the board, and then untap, tap your god, Heart of Kirin, and, like, smush. But, like, it's very powerful when you're trying to, like, survive the early rush on turn three. So my question is modern.
Yeah.
Do you think this is going to open up a space in modern where there wasn't one originally? You know, blue-white is kind of the premier control deck in modern. You know, I don't see this card being able to fit in the same deck that wants to play Cryptic Command, because they do two opposing things. But is it better than Anger of the Gods? Is it better than Pyroclasm? Is it better than Supreme Verdict? You know, where on that spectrum of stuff does it fall?
I don't know, man. To me, this reminds me a lot of Smallpox in Modern, whereas like you're gaining, you can kind of time it right, and the situation can be right where you can gain some really major advantage, where you're kind of sacrificing a lot of your own resources to gain some major advantage. And like in both situations, if you have a Planeswalker on the board, you're really like really gaining some advantage. Like both pair really well with like a Liliana of the Veil, right? And in this case, like, you can play, like, a low land count. You resolve Liliana one turn. Next turn, Bantu's Last Reckoning or Smallpox, you know, something in it. And it's really hard for the opponent to you know, overcome that because you're just totally taking over at that point as far as card advantage goes. But there's little incentive to play this over, like, all of the 4-mana Wrath of God spells that already exist in Modern.
Damnation.
And all of the efficient removal spells that already exist in Modern. I mean, we've got, like, even Fatal Push is in standard, you know, and Fatal Push is a great removal spell.
Right, but this card is great to pair with Fatal Push.
It is, yeah.
Because what you can do is you can wrath the board with Bantu Last Reckoning, and then on your untap, when you don't untap, you can go land, have Fatal Push, and pass. So, like, wrathing the board with Bantus into cleaning up their next threat with a Fatal Push is very powerful. So that's sort of why I ask, you know, does it fit in Modern? Where on the spectrum of sweet, efficient wraths does this fit? Like, is it better than Anger of the Gods or Pyroclasm?
I don't know.
It's probably
not better than Anger of the Gods.
Because that's my direct comparison. Is this better than Anger of the Gods? Because they both do essentially the same thing. When you're casting Anger of the Gods, it's going to wrath the board.
Yeah, it's definitely not better than Anger of the Gods. I can tell you that. But in terms sure. of the color options that you have, like, I mean, you're not going to be like, both of them require double color symbol mana in their mana right. cost, right? So like I can see this being really good in like a mono black deck. Like so, perhaps like 8-Rack really wants this card. That might be the one, you know.
So the argument is this better than Anger of the Gods strictly because of the mana cost? Because, like, I played a Season Smash Shun deck and I 5-0'd earlier this week with it. And the one thing I ran into was, you know, I had to go out of my way to fetch multiple red sources or, like, take extra damage to navigate my red requirements because my deck was base green-black. And it was splashing red for, like, Kolaghan's Command, Bolt, Terminate, and some various, like, finisher creatures.
Uh-huh.
But, like, realistically, if I could just go Overgrown Tomb, Overgrown Tomb, Overgrown Tomb, Blooming Marsh, you know, whatever green-black dual lands I want and have, like, one splash because I only need red for Bolt or I don't need multiple red to cast my spell on turn three to wipe the board, like, that's way better.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, there is that kind of realistic concept of, you know, when I'm boarding in sweepers in my Abzan or my Jund deck that I had a Jund Charm, two Anger of the Gods, and a Damnation. So my base green black deck, I brought in a Damnation. That was pretty easy to support. It's a Jund deck, so one of every color, pretty easy to support, unless you draw like double forest or double swamp. But Anger of the Gods, like I only have one mountain, and so I have to either draw one of my four Raging Ravines or fetch a bunch of my red sources, and I only have three red shocks. So, like, the red land count is so skewed because I can't fetch them because I have four Raging Ravines. So it's like the Anger of the Gods isn't particularly easy on your mana, whereas in your base green-black deck, Bantu's Last Reckoning is. So, you know, is there a world where the Jund decks get to cut Anger for this? I don't know the answer to that question. I think it's probably no, because for a Jund deck, like wiping the board and then like being able to untap and play like two Tarmogoyfs or Tarmogoyf and Bob or Tarmogoyf and have removal or Scavenging Ooze or like, you know, four drop threat if they have it like a Kalidus or a Huntmaster or something like that seems much better than Bantu's Last Reckoning.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's just my thought. Like, you could pair Bantu's Last Reckoning in a deck with Tasigur, so that, you know, you Bantu's and you untap, you play a black source and you delve for Tasigur. And like, or Gurmag Angler, if that's, you know, more your speed. So like, that's a concept that you could try out. But it's just a matter of like, what really, how do you want to piece it all together?
Yeah, that's not a bad thought. I mean, Tasigur usually goes in decks that like max out at like three lands in a lot of games, you know? So you're never going to hit four. Like, those decks never really have the option of playing like Damnation. And that would give you the option of playing like just straight up blue-black and having access to, you know, a Wrath of God type of spell.
Yeah. It's really hard to evaluate is my thought. Because realistically, it costs six mana.
Yeah, yes, it does. It's kind of like you pay now.
You pay an echo cost.
Pay later. Yeah, pay an echo cost.
And so the question becomes, you know, is the echo cost worth the fact that you can cast it a turn earlier?
Yeah.
And so I think it's really hard to evaluate, and I would have to play games with it. Like, I'm not an expert card evaluator, so I'd have to sit down and play some games with it in just, like, decks where I would play something else, like Anger of the Gods. And go, well, is this better than Anger of the Gods? Let me play games with it, see if it does what I want it to do. And if the answer is just like, oh, God, no, that was awful, then, you know, we obviously know it's worse than Anger of the Gods.
Well, we'll have to see.
Yeah,
this is
an
interesting comment here. Someone said something about Bantu's Last Reckoning in the comments on, I'm actually looking at the Goldfish page with the spoilers. Basically, sure. Bantu's Last Reckoning does something that relates to Bantu, the god card, which Bantu can only attack if a creature died this turn. Bantu's Last Reckoning destroys all creatures. So the thought is that this is maybe part of a cycle in this new set, whereas we're going to have one of these cards for each of the gods from
Their reckonings.
Yeah, their reckoning cards. So maybe there's a lands you control don't untap until their next untap, or lands you control don't untap during
with a super busted ability.
Yeah.
So like 2-mana Lingering Souls would be a good example, like for Oketra's Last Reckoning.
Right. So like, yeah, you think like Kefnet would probably be like a 3-mana like draw four. Yeah, maybe draw three and
instant speed or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so that's exciting to think about. Like, what could we see with those guys? Like, probably a pump spell out of Rownus's Last Reckoning, and
yeah,
you know,
or make like a 5/5 creature or something like that.
Yeah,
Hazoret like trades your cards for damage, like deal 6 damage and discard 2 cards as additional cost of the spell or something like that.
With stuff like this, it makes me nervous from a design perspective, because it's awfully hard to balance something like this. And, I mean, it's awfully difficult for us to evaluate it from a player's perspective. I can't even imagine, like, going through R&D, like, thinking, like, well, did we do the right thing? You know, like...
Yeah, I mean, it's so
ruin,
hard.
Did we just ruin standard?
Yeah, it's so hard to balance.
Because
like,
it could very well be, like... You know, it could very well be Bounty's Last Reckoning.
Yeah, it could be just like Bounty's Last Reckoning is insane and enables some like busted Grixis control deck with Glimmer of Genius and Torrential Gearhulk, and people just get wrecked.
Yes. Well, all right. So let's move on. We've got more spoilers to talk about. The Archenemy Nicol Bolas. Yeah, and the only new cards from these really are the Archenemy cards.
Yep, those are the only new cards, is the Archenemy schemes.
But the deck lists are revealed for all 4 decks, and basically the way this works is this is a one-shot box now, instead of giving you, I don't know how many different boxes were released last time, but you can buy individual decks last time. For $60 is the MSRP anyways, and this is released on June 16th. You get this Archenemy box with 3 decks, Gideon, Chandra, and Nissa, that are supposed to go and team up against the Archenemy Nicol Bolas deck. So it's kind of a cool concept. This is the Nicol Bolas Planeswalker, the original Nicol Bolas, and not the new one that we just
got. Oh, man, if they put that new one in there. Woo. Boy.
But they picked some interesting Planeswalkers for your 3 Musketeers here. We've got Gideon Jura, which is a pretty good choice for Gideon. That's like a $10 card right now. We got Chandra Pyromaster.
Yeah, that card's really good.
Nisa Worldwaker. So these are no slouches, you know, it's not like we put in like Chandra Blaze or anything.
Yeah, these are all like super standard playable. Like they got played in standard a bunch.
Yeah, all
and they're just really strong. Yeah, really strong Planeswalkers.
And
Gideon's
kind of a hot topic right now.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of really like this Gideon art over the old Gideon art, to be honest. I just wish it was a foil.
Yeah, all three of them got new arts, including all 4 of them. I should say, Nicol Bolas got new art as well. I don't know. I'm curious kind of out on these arts. I know that the printing process on these, like, these products are always kind of funky, and like the process is always a little funny.
I really like all the arts because the same guy did them all.
Yeah.
And they're all really good. I just don't like that they're foil, just because I don't like foils. I don't care if it was the real foiling process or some random foil I just don't like foils, so I don't want any part of it.
You know what's cool about them, though, is they're... The perspective that they take, like each one of them, they look thematically the same. And each of the 3 planeswalkers that are battling Nicol Bolas, the image is kind of looking down on them, and then the image of Nicol Bolas is like looking up on Nicol Bolas. It's very cool. It makes you feel like you're kind of part of that.
Yeah, that's a part of the consistency of having the same guy do all the art.
So I looked through these, and when you're paying $60 for a product like this, the first question you ask is really kind of like, is it worthwhile?
Am I getting my money's worth?
And the answer is actually kind of yes for this one. As far as like the sheer value of these, if you were to go and buy all the singles, you'd be spending much more than $60. But there are quite a few chase cards in the packs, and the notable reprints in these guys, at least for current prices. Gideon Jura is about $10. There's a Sun Titan in the Gideon Jura deck, which is about a $4 card. The Chandra deck's got a Grim Lavamancer, excuse me, which is about a $4 card. The Chandra herself is like $2 or $3, not much, but still good. Yeah. Good card, and it's playable in Scred or something. and then Nissa Worldwaker is about $8.50, something like that. Yeah. By the way, Ms. Grand Abolisher is actually a valuable card. That's like a $6 card. I had no idea. That's in the.
I am very well aware of the cost of Grand Abolisher because I literally just bought one for EDH.
Oh, did you?
I was super sad.
Yeah.
That I just bought one for an EDH and it was $6. I was like, that card's like $1. $6.
No, I got a bunch of those guys sitting around. And then
Nico, I wish I'd have known.
Nico Boss, $8, and there's a Baleful Strix in the Nico Boss. Like, they're really trying to squeeze those Baleful Strix in as many products as possible to really bring that price down.
Baleful Strix is an insanely good card.
It is a great card, and it really only
You know what product they need to put it in?
What?
Modern Masters.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to see that card in Modern. That'd be awesome.
Oh, baby. They're talking about somebody to be real excited about that one.
Yeah. You know, they're not giving that Cascade guy the same treatment. What's the Cascade card? The
Shardless Agent?
Blue? Yeah, Shardless Agent. That card is still like $14, $15. That's an uncommon from the same product line as Baleful Strix, isn't it?
Yes.
But Baleful Strix has gotten now like two or three reprints.
Yeah.
Even in Conspiracy at Rare, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Something like that. And so that's down, you know, to like about $2. It was like $10 for a while.
There's some Shardless Agents now.
Yeah, Shardless Agent's insanely
expensive. Yeah, I mean, it's doable. I like the deck. It's a good thematic thing. Will not buy, personally, but that's just me.
Yeah, probably not either, but I'd love to play it. I think it looks like it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
There's some cool cards in here, too. Like, you know, there's the Dual Casper Mage in the red deck. Like, there's some fun cards, you know. There are also, like, your Blood Ogre, you know. Like, that's, I find Bloodthirst for the first strike. Just some boring stuff, but...
Sure.
But Grim Lavamancer, I mean, they put some useful rares in here. I think they're doing a good job with this one.
Yeah.
Torchlight. Hey, cool. Inferno Titan, right? Avatar Fury? Okay.
No. Inferno Titan, pretty solid.
But here's the thing. They've got the Sun Titan in the Gideon deck. They've got Inferno Titan in the Chandra deck. And then green deck? Oh, it's Landfall? Okay. All right. Prime time?
No
prime time.
No PTP, baby. Can't
reprint that one for some reason, huh? So that would just...
Man, it'd be super cool if they gave him new arts, too. And they would have reprinted Primetime with a new art. Oh,
yeah. They would give the Titans new art. They haven't shown that yet.
Hopefully. Man can hope. So I think we're done with the spoilers. I don't have much to say about it. Good product. Good price point.
Yeah. You know, these...
If you're a casual player, it's for you. If you're not, it's not.
These archenemy cards, the schemes, I should say, those are always something to hold on to. Because I always, when you look at MTG stocks and see like what the value of the cards are as they kind of change each week, a lot of times, I think it's the plane chase cards primarily that are actually like always taking up in value. But these cards probably, you know, have a similar trajectory because of just being so limited.
I hate archenemy cards, so yeah, you guys can have them.
Yeah, I think, like, just generally, like, a lot of people don't like playing this type of format, but I'm hoping that now with some experience under their belt and having done this once before, they maybe can make the format
a little more fun. They get it right.
I'm willing to try. I've never played it.
I have. I don't enjoy it.
No, not fun. Okay.
I mean, I guess it might be just that I don't enjoy it because I played it with not the decks that were built for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would probably do it.
I played it with their decks. We played, like, Arch Enemy EDH.
Uh-huh.
That was not fun.
Yeah, that I can imagine would probably not be fun.
No, it's not because, like, if you play Arch Enemy EDH and you play like, a combo deck, like, some of the schemes are just so good that they're like, here's 3 mana, or, like, draw 4 cards, and you're just like, oh, well,
yeah.
Sick. All right. Random four mana Sphinx's Revelation or something like that. Yeah, alright, ship it. You know, like...
Yep. Alright, well, let's go to Manila.
The Thrilla in Manila.
We had a GP in Manila, standard GP. We had 3 standard Grand Prix this weekend. Manila had quite a bit of diversity. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 decks. Not a 1... Not, oh, okay, there's 1 Marvel. 1 Marvel in the top 8. That's it. How about that? White, blue, flash, Esper vehicles, Marvel, green, red, pummeler, Mardu vehicles, mono, black, zombies, green, black, energy, and vehicles. That's quite a bit of diversity for standard, don't you think?
Well, that's impressive. That's actually 8 different decks.
That is 8 different decks. Now, there is Mardu vehicles and vehicles, which I assume are really kind of like the same thing, so I don't know if that counts.
This is just red, white. Oh, no, it is Guardian Eagle.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Seven decks.
So, there Esper you go. Esper Vehicles is kind of different. That's new. But it's basically just replace black with blue. And then cut red, red entirely.
Yeah, all right.
But this is kind of a cool deck. So this Esper Vehicles deck, which is the second place deck, Thraven Inspector, Toolcraft Exemplar, your usual suspect, Glorybond Initiate. I don't know if that's a typical Vehicles player.
No, it is.
Self of Spirit, Spell Queller, Avacyn Archangel, Gideon Jura, of course, Metallic Rebuke. All right, we're playing like kind of a control game here. Aethersphere Harvester, Heart of Kirin, Stasis Snare, and Cast Out because Marvel exists.
Yeah, so really, we're actually playing a tempo game.
Tempo, yeah.
Yeah, we're trying to be a tempo deck. Like, ideally, our turns just go like Toolcraft Exemplar into Glorybound Initiate, or Toolcraft Exemplar into Heart of Kirin, take three, and like somewhere get a Glorybound Initiate in there because it's just a 4/4 lifelinker when you exert it. And so, like, if you can, like, curve that turn four, it's, like, 11 damage with the Heart of Kirin. So, you, like, crew, or it's 8 damage with the Heart of Kirin on turn four, because you attack for 3 on turn 2 with Toolcraft Exemplar. Crew Heart of Kirin, attack for 4, play Glorybound Initiate, play another card if you have a 1 drop. And then, like, attack with Glorybound Initiate and Heart of Kirin, exert the Glorybound Initiate. You're looking at, putting your opponent to 4 if they have no interaction. So.
Now, I hear that negate is pretty good against Aetherworks Marvel. But I also hear that Spellqueller is pretty damn good against Aetherworks Marvel.
Less good against Aetherworks Marvel than the game. Much less.
And Metallic Rebuke probably does a pretty good job against it, too.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the Aetherworks Marvel deck has Harness Lightning. If it didn't have Harness Lightning, then it would be great. And then, like, the Marvel deck here had Glorybringer, which is a beatdown. Chandra also kind of rough for your heroes. So I mean,
now Standard is getting to the point now where even though we're seeing different decks in the top 8, we're not seeing a lot of different kinds of decks. Like it's just kind of like we're just cycling through, we're just rolling through these different decks.
And hold on, this
Esper Vehicles deck just seems to me to be a smashing of white blue flash and
you're correct. Yeah. You want to talk about different decks?
Yeah,
right?
Let's talk about different decks. Where are you?
I'm at. This is a sarcastic interlude. GP Omaha.
Oh, okay, we're going to Omaha now. Okay, wait. What's wrong with Omaha?
Omaha. To do my best Peyton Manning impression, I'm just gonna read off the top. I'm gonna read off the top 8 decks here. You ready?
Yeah.
Marvel.
Okay.
Green Black Delirium in second. Marvel. Marvel, 8th place Team Energy, which is basically Marvel without the Marvel.
Yeah, it's just aggro energy.
Yeah. That's what it is. It's basically the Marvel cards without the Marvel.
Yeah, I kind of like the Team Energy deck. I'm glad to see that one.
I think I like the Team Energy deck just because, like, Marvel does have a certain fail rate that if you just don't hit Umag, you lose. But,
it's pretty damn different, Daryl. It's got, like, a shit ton of creatures in it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's got that same energy core. Like, of course, you're replacing the core of, like, Ulamog and Aetherworks Marvel with, like, Glorybringer and Bristling Hydra.
Sure, sure.
But, like, you're playing pretty much the exact same game, which is make a bunch of energy, use it to do something. Whether that's Aetherworks Marvel and spin the wheel, or that's make a really big Bristling Hydra, like, does not matter.
I don't know. I don't look at any of these top 8s and think to myself, this is a very healthy and inviting standard metagame right now. But I also don't look at this and think to myself, like, from an outsider's perspective, because I wouldn't consider myself a standard player at this point. I don't really think and feel like something needs to be banned right now.
No, I think it's the same issue you had with Saheeli Rai combo, which is it's miserable to play against. Like, the card Aetherworks Marvel is absolutely miserable to play against. And so, like, will they ban a card that's absolutely miserable to play against? Possibly. 100% possible. But I don't think it's broken.
Yeah. Yeah, I we got to just be really careful with that. I think that's a really touchy subject at this point. And the conversation comes up every week. I know it, but
I think with the printing of it. I think with the printing of Bolas, you're going to see a Marvel ban.
You think so, huh?
I think so. I think that Bolas is just a little too good to like spin the wheel on turn four, play a Bolas, him your opponent, or spin the wheel on turn four plus the Bolas, play like your opponent's Archangel Avacyn if it's like best case scenario. Yeah. You know, like I think that, and then like in the Marvel mirror, if you spin the wheel before your opponent does, get a Bolas and you plus it and get Lulamog, opponent's just dead.
Yeah.
Like, I think that Bolas might be the death knell for Marvel. Just because, like, it's another really, really powerful thing to put into play.
Sure.
So, like, now you have a critical mass again of ridiculously powerful things to put into play off Marvel. Yeah. So.
All right, let's look at one more. We're going to go to Amsterdam really quick.
Amsterdam! We going to smoke some pot?
Sure, Daryl, while we're there.
Yeah, why not? It's a free one. So what do we got here?
We got a lot of stuff going on here. The Black Green Delirium deck actually won. This is kind of like a snakes deck, really, is what it is.
Oh, wow.
But Constrictor, if you will. Walking Ballista, Grim Flare, Winding Constrictor, Rishkar, Tireless Tracker, Bridgeless Gearhook, one Liliana, three Nissa, Voice of Zendikar, that is. Fatal Push, Traverse, Dissenter's Deliverance, four main deck Dissenter's Deliverance.
He wanted to beat Aetherworks Marvel.
Yeah, but it also does a good job of powering up your Delirium, because it cycles.
Yeah, and it turns off, it kills vehicles, it kills Marvel, kills Gearhulk, kills Ballista, and it cycles.
Yeah, that's good. It's fine. I think that's totally fair and totally fine.
That's just a lot of that card. Like, there's some number of that card, and then there's a lot of that card.
Consider that the top, like, 40% of decks play artifacts, like, as their primary source of winning the game. Like, between vehicles and Marvel, you know, like, 40% of the meta has either Aetherworks Marvel killing you or Heart of Kirin
killing you. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a good choice. I think that's a great choice. I love that. In fact,
anyway, I just think it's cool.
Second place, though, I just want to talk about one more deck in this topic. Second place was a control deck. Yeah, and we kind of both agreed that after the Marvel Pro Tour, that this control deck was going to be the thing that kind of like stomped on this Marvel deck. Why do you think it's not the case? Because it seems to be that this deck is just not cutting it in this meta.
So I think it can beat up on Marvel, but I think it struggles with the other decks.
Yeah,
like,
that's
like counterspell. So counterspells beat Aetherworks Marvel, like your super fast aggro decks. Because if you look at like the removal spells you have like Magma Spray and Harness Lightning, and you have a couple of Sweltering Suns. Like if you don't get on the 1-for-1 train early, then you get drowned out by the guys. Like, you have to have enough removal to keep the vehicles from getting turned on. You have to have enough removal to beat, like, Pummeler and stuff like that. And then, like, the green, the real problem, though, is green-black anything. Yeah. Because with Rishkar and Verdurous Gearhulk, their guys can get bigger than your removal.
Sure.
And so, like, if you get, like, a four-power guy against this deck, against this red-green deck, or red-blue deck, what are they going to do? They're going to cast Harness Lightning and then Magma Spray? Okay.
Yeah, the burn is just lackluster right now, isn't it?
Yeah. The burn
is good, but Magma Spray.
What's good?
Harness Lightning's good.
Oh, yeah. But Magma Spray is not good. It's just
dead.
It's just not enough. Yeah. So, like, because of that, you're just a little bit behind. But yeah, like, when you look at this deck, 4 Censor, 2 negate, 3 disallow, a void shatter, and a summary dismissal. All that absolutely crushes like trying to get Aetherworks Marvel into play.
Yeah.
Like, that's big deal. And so, because a lot of people will just jam Marvel on turn 4 and get censored, and it'll be horrible. I think Becca is very sweet. But I could see you just losing games to Marvel if they resolve it, Because the problem is they still get the cash trigger of Ulamog and they just exile your lands. So you might count on it the first Ulamog, but the second Ulamog, you're probably not going to have the lands to counter. And that's going to be a bad time.
Yeah, it's just like that one card can generate so much advantage, huh?
Yeah, like Aetherworks Marvel generates so much advantage. Whether it be putting a really powerful planeswalker into play or eating your lands with Ulamog, it's just like it's such an uphill battle if they get Aetherworks Marvel on the play. Yeah. Like Ali Antrazi and Frank Lepore talked about it at one point on their Twitters separately. Like, would it have been so bad for them to print a like 3-mana artifact or like 3-mana red spell or something like that that says like players lose all energy, players can't gain energy, like a permanent that does that?
Yeah, we talked about that too. It's, I mean, obviously not going to happen because we've left that block, but.
Yeah, like, would it have been offensive for that to happen?
Yeah.
Is the question. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's leave Standard. I think that's enough of that for now.
Okay.
There's one deck we got to talk about in Modern here, and I think you kind of revealed it earlier when we got together to cast. This abomination that
I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything about it. I just looked at what you put in the chat and or what you put in the show notes, and I got so confused how we ended up here.
Let me just read this out loud and just see if you can follow this as you're listening along here. This is Modern. White, black, green is the label on this one. That's all that's given to us here.
There's not a good label for this at all.
It's there's like just one Walking Ballista. Okay, so there's a clue. One Wild Cantor, which Wild Cantor is a hybrid red-green mana for a 1/1 human druid. You can sacrifice it to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. 4 Devoted Druid. 1 Duskwatch Recruiter. 4 Vizier of Remedies. 4 Street Wraith. Okay, what's going on? 4 Pact of Negation?
We know what's going on. We know it's Devoted Druid combo.
But what the hell is this guy doing? 4 Summoner's Pact, 4 Commune with Nature, 4 Traverse the Ovenwald, 3 Manamorphos, 4 right. Mishra's Bauble, 1 Conjurer's Bauble.
Yeah.
Which Conjurer's Bauble is 1 mana for an artifact, tap, sack it, put up to 1 target creature card from your graveyard on the bottom of your library. Sorry. Draw a card. 4 Oath of Nyssa, 3 Unbridled Growth, and then there are 14 lands in this deck. 14! 1 Forest, 4 Hall of the Bandit Lord. Alright, get this. This is a land that comes into play tapped. It's a legendary land. Tap it and pay 3 life to add 1 colorless mana to your mana pool. If that mana is spent on a creature spell, that creature has haste. Alright. So this allows you to combo off with your Devoted Druid the turn you play it. 2 Horizon Canopy, 2 Misty Rainforest, 2 Temple Garden, and 3 Verdant Catacombs. So this guy's just balls to the wall, druid combo.
I had a cold chill from just reading that. The sideboard is even more ridiculous. 4 Path to Exile, 4 Mirroring Crusader, 4 Kwasala Ambusher, which is a 1 green white reach, 2/3. If a creature is attacking you, and you control a forest and a plains, you may flash this in without paying its mana cost as though it had flash. So if you have a Temple Garden in play and your opponent attacks you, you can flash in a 2/3 reach for free.
Yes. Wait, keep going though. 2 Reclamation Sage and 1 Mystic Enforcer?
Yeah. What? Pro Black 6/6? All right. Yeah.
4 mana for a 3/3 protection from black. Threshold, it gets +3/+3 and flying as long as there are 7 or more cards in your graveyard. So you get that pretty quickly with your Street Wraiths and Mishra's Baubles and whatnot. Metamorphos. This deck is crazy. So when you look at the pictures that show up on the sides of the deck list here and you see Mishra's Bauble, Pact of Negation, and Summoner's Pact, you know that they're up to something.
Yeah, you're just like, ?...
Huh. But lo and behold, it's just a freaking Vizier Devoted Druid combo deck.
Oh my god.
With plenty of ways to search it out, and not a single collecting company, not a single Court of Call. Looks
like the most miserable thing ever.
But yeah, this Matsugan, whoever played this deck here, took it to a 5-0 finish in a competitive Modern League. on the 5th, which was just today. It just got posted today, so it must have been yesterday that they did
this.
The Bandit Lord is actually kind of cool in here. I'm considering playing like one of those in my green-white version of this deck that has the Knight of the Reliquary, so I can like fetch it out, like pop it, devoted to
the Bandit Lord with Knight of the Bandit Lord with Knight of the Reliquary is very good.
Yeah. But the 3 life is so much to pay, and it comes into play tapped. It's like,
oh yeah,
it's like, such a cost.
Yeah, card is super busto with your creatures, but it's super expensive. Like it's a steep cost in mana,
and it's very bad with mana dorks. It just
not good. With them.
Why does he need the Wild Cantor? May I ask?
It's a summoner's packable target to be able to filter your mana colors.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah, I guess you're right, huh? And the Unbridled Growth.
I played a lot of very bad combo decks in Modern or in Legacy that involved having Summoner's Pack for Wild Cantor.
Yeah.
It's 100% why it's there. It's a one mana creature that you can use the turn you're going off to filter green into white.
This is only like 15 cards away from Modern Oops All Spells, isn't it?
I mean, pretty much.
It's like 14 cards, 14 lands.
Yeah, if you had a bunch of Lotus Petals in your deck, like,
All right, anyways, let's leave that one behind. That's enough talk about that abomination. Modern continues to be, like, super healthy and in a really cool spot. I'm so happy about it right now. Let me just ask you this, Daryl. With no limitations in Modern, and you're going to a GP this weekend, what deck do you take?
Oh, wow.
It's kind of a tough question to answer, right? It's sort of hard to determine what the best deck is in the format right now. It's
an insanely difficult question to answer.
Results show that the metagame is comprised of Death Shadow at 6.69%, Eldrazi Tron at 6.2%, Affinity at 6%, Burn at 5.5%, but I wouldn't necessarily pick one of those top 4 decks because they're known commodities.
So here's the thing. If I could play anything, I would probably play some kind of Jund.
Would you? Okay. It's always a safe bet, isn't it?
It's not that it's always a safe bet. It's that I think the meta is ripe to be beat up by Lightning Bolt.
Yeah.
And Polygon's Command.
Okay.
And so you could play Grixis and have Snapcaster Mage. Or you could play Jund and have Tarmogoyf. I think Tarmogoyf, even with the printing of Fatal Push, is really good right now. But there are a couple cards in Jund I'm not particularly interested in.
Which ones?
And it's Dark Confidant and Liliana the Veil.
The most expensive ones.
And I've been playing Jund on Modo. I would be like looking to play like a bigger Jund. So like the problem with Dark Confidant is that it is very susceptible to all of the hate that's coming up in the meta.
Yeah.
Because of the sudden and steep rise in Counters Company.
Yeah, like, that's true. That's fair.
Like, it's soft to Lightning Bolt, which should go up because of Counters Company. Uh-huh. It's soft to Electrolyze, which you've seen out of the blue-red decks because of Counters Company, playing a bunch of Mana Dorks. Vizier's a one toughness creature. Devoted Druid's a two toughness creature, so you can Electrolyze, put all the damage on it, and kill it. So, like, it's very soft to these cards that are coming up because of the rise of Counters Company. And it's just a really fragile card that, like, your card advantage is this creature, and it has to live, or you get nothing out of it. And so, like, with Fatal Push and Path and all these new other removal spells that are playable, like, you're not going to get much out of it, and you're going to waste your Kolaghan's Commands on returning Dark Confidant to your hand. And then you're not going to have pressure, because it's just 2-1. And then Liliana the Veil, like, if people are going wide, like in the Counters Company deck, like, I don't want to play Liliana the Veil. Like, making them discard a card, if you get to make them discard Collect Company, sweet. But what are you going to edict them and they're going to sacrifice a Birds of Paradise?
Right.
I'm not particularly interested. You know, it's okay against Death Shadow if you can get it down before you get Death Shadowed, like, or if they don't just take it from your hand. So, like, and, like, in your bigger Jund style decks that I'm envisioning, you don't want to discard cards.
Yeah.
But I think the suite of like discard plus removal with like Bolt and Fatal Push and Terminate and Abrupt Decay and Kolaghan's Command and Pulse, like you have all these pieces that you can maneuver to get into a very good spot as far as having a sufficient number of removal and discard spells. Because you can sideboard Duress or more Inquisitions or more Thought Seizes or, you know, for more removal, you can play Ancient Grudge against Affinity, you got more Abrupt Decays. You have all of these powerful removal tools and all these powerful discard tools at your disposal. And so, you know, the question is, how do you kill them? So if we're not playing Dark Confidant, we need a card advantage engine. Because we're not playing Dark Confidant and Liliana, which great card disadvantage for your opponent, card advantage for you. So one of the cards I've been playing is Seasons Passion deck, which I don't necessarily think I would play that specific deck. But one of the just very powerful cards that I've been testing is Tireless Tracker. And in Modern with Fetchlands, it's just been bananas.
Oh my god, yeah, that card is insane in Modern.
So I played a game against just Mono White Hate Bears where I like played a turn 2 Tarmogoyf and they pathed it, and then I played a turn 3 Scavenging Ooze when there were like 3 guys in the yard and I pathed it, and then I untapped and played a Tireless Tracker and played a Fetchland, and I ended up getting like 8 clues off of it over the course of a game because my clues would just draw me into more Fetchlands.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I created 8 clues, and at some point I just had like a 6/6 that was attacking into like Thalia and Rinwing Mare and Flicker Wisp. And it's just like, well, it's a 6/5. I gotta like triple block to be able to do anything. And then if I happen to have like a lightning bolt, which I probably did because I had like 8 clues, you know, like if I have a lightning bolt, it just blew up your entire block and you just got wrecked. So like that card has been super powerful. Now, what other like bigger creature accoutrements you want to go alongside of it? That's interesting. Whether you want Huntmaster or you want Pian Kirin or Kalidus or Olivia Voldaren or Thragtusk or, you know, just more other 3-drop creatures that you could play. Sort of figuring out the proper shell. But I think I'm interested in, like, trying to kill people faster than I am just trying to play, like, Snapcaster Counterspell games. And I'm interested in playing, like, Scavengers and Tarmogoyf and Child Shrekker. So, like, Jund fits pretty well. You could play this deck a little more aggressively and shave some of your Inquisitions for Thought Seizes and fetch a little more aggressively and play Death Shadow if you wanted to. But then you're just probably better off playing Death Shadow Jund. So, I mean, the Tireless Tracker, I think, is in a very good spot. It only really dies to Lightning Bolt and Kolaghan's Command early because Fatal Push makes it kind of difficult after people have like rolled all their fetch lands out early to like push your Tireless Tracker. And so if they don't have pushed enough path, it's just like Abrupt Decay and Terminate. And then like Bolt. So you can't really play around Bolt unless you make 2 clues, and you can't play around a Abrupt Decay turn. But like once you get past like the first turn of untapping with Tireless Tracker, you've pretty much won the game. And you're guaranteed that if you play it on turn 4, you're guaranteed to draw an extra card, unlike Bob on turn 2. So and it's a little easier on your life total. So like that's kind of why I'm interested in that. But like I think Jund is a pretty safe bet with just the mix of powerful removal and powerful discard. It's just a matter of like what you put in it to kill people with.
You know, I was a little hesitant on Tireless Tracker too, for the reason that he has 2 toughness. But Fatal Push, first of all, isn't a gimme for a greater than 2 casting cost creature. You know, they've got to have the fetch land at the ready, and that's not always the case. They've got to be holding one at the ready, meaning that they're not doing something with their third land at the time.
Yeah.
And they're passing the turn. But in a deck that plays creatures on turns 1 and 2, you're taxing their removal. You know, if you're playing a Scavenging Ooze on 2, they're going to be using their removal on their on the Scavenging Ooze. So, you know, there are only so many targets. There's only so much removal. By the time you're playing your turn 3 creature, what do they got left? You know, they got to do something with their cards in their deck, you know, unless you're walking into a big Supreme Verdict, you're doing okay. And even then, if you're going to play your Tireless Tracker and put a clue out, not the worst thing in the world, right?
Yeah, so your clue traded 1-for-1 with the Supreme Verdict, and the you know the Tireless Tracker just kind of died somewhere in there.
Right, but the card's insane in Modern. I'm a believer. I'm a firm believer now. I was in a deck alongside of Courser of Kruphix, which is great value. Courser of Kruphix is a great main deck card right now.
Yep. So that was the other creature I switched out Tireless Tracker, Courser of Kruphix for Tireless Tracker, because my problem was I wasn't getting enough value out of Courser of Kruphix. Yeah. Because you would need to draw cards, and Courser of Kruphix wasn't killing your opponent fast enough.
Oh, you need both. You want both.
Yeah. Yeah, like the slots, I was running into the fact that slots for both is the problem.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah.
Well, I've got two of each of those guys, and I've got three Knight of the Reliquary in my green white deck. And
yeah,
the package of all three of those guys is insane. Like, you collect a company into a pair of those guys. Any combination of two, and it's like,
here comes the value town. Yeah, the one way train to value town.
Yeah.
So are you in on your like green white counters company? If that's what you had, if you could play anything in Modern, I guess this is the key word I would say. If you could play anything in Modern competently and test it. So like, you had all the time and the money to get whatever selection of cards you wanted. Test the shit out of them and like go to that GP. Because I would play something of the Jund variety.
Yeah, I think that's probably what I'd take. That or I'd take my old trusty Delver deck just to catch people on their toes, you know. As much as I've played Delver, I tried to pick up the Grixis Death Shadow deck. In fact, I have it in paper now. I'm gonna run it on Thursday at our local Modern event.
Very different.
I've played it online a bit, and yeah, it is very, very different. It's a hard deck to play. And I've been putting a bunch of stuff on Reddit to kind of crowdsource some information as far as like sideboarding and mulliganing and things. And I'm finding that everybody's got a different opinion on those things. And stark contrast in these ideas. It's like no one can agree on like what hands are keepers and like what the turn one play is. Like, for example, like you've got a fetch land, you've got, you know, 6 1-drops in your hand. Which 1-drop do you play? Everyone's got a different opinion on which one is the right one to do. It's a difficult deck to play because there are so many decisions to make as far as, like, you know, when is it right to shock yourself? When is it right to, you know, tap out on your turn for, like, a Serum Visions versus wait and thought scour yourself?
Sure.
But it certainly rewards tight play and knowing the deck really well. But the other thing is that deck's got a huge target on its head right now because it is the most the most commonly finishing deck, like, in the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
And so it makes it even more difficult to play. And so a deck like, for example, like Mono Blue Tron might give someone a little bit of a surprise. And if you're really, really comfortable with that deck, for example, you're probably at a pretty big advantage knowing that this is the deck you're comfortable playing. No one's packing hate for Mono Blue Tron right now. You know, that you're in good shape, you know? So yeah. I think that the most important thing is that you play what you know.
Right.
Whatever the deck of the day is.
That's why I caveated that with, if you could play something well tested and knowledgeably with no budget, what would you take? And you're still in the green white company camp. You're like, I like this green white company.
Yeah. Funny enough, I say don't play the deck of the day, and yeah, I would be on green white company. But my deck is not Abzan company. It is green white company. So it is a little bit of a different take on that. So.
Sure.
A green white value company. So
sure.
There you have it. That's what I'd probably take. That, or like I said, Grixis Delver would be my go to, the one I'm comfortable with, and the deck that I think would catch people off guard.
So we get on Modern there.
Yeah, I think we're good on Modern. That doesn't leave a whole lot left in our show notes.
I got something that I want to talk about that's not in the show notes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm pregnant. it's actually on Daily MTG right now. I'll put the link in the show notes so you can share it with people. I don't know, are you going to Vegas?
I am not, but...
I'm not either.
Yeah.
I'm not either.
Okay.
So, one of the people I follow on Twitter, Gem of Magic, came up with a sweet idea for like, and you're gonna like hear it and be like, oh, this is girly. Well, girl came up with it, so chill. A Twitter-based MTG like sleepover during GP Vegas. So everyone just like in their houses, hanging out, whatever, connected on Twitter. I linked up with her and helped some people create a Discord for it. So like there's two different mediums. They're gonna have like D&D games, MTG streams, art competitions, like just hang out in your apartments, your houses, your rooms, your hotels, wherever you're at, and just like be able to interconnect with a bunch of Magic players and, you know, have the fun that you would be having if you were going to Vegas in the comfort of your own home.
Nice. I did actually see that on the mothership today. So
Yeah. That's awesome. And so, yeah, but I think it's going to be an awesome event. I'm super excited to like try and help organize a tiny bit. But like just to participate, I think I'm going to stream a couple days during it, and play. I don't know if I'm going to play Seasons Pass or if I'm just going to play, like, try and play all the formats. I don't know what I'm going to do. But cool. It looked really sweet. I was super excited about it. I'm going to do it. You should do it, too. But if you don't, you know, people, you can feel free to join. It's gonna be just a social event for the Magic and Gathering community. So I think it's kind of cool.
Awesome. By the way, we'd be happy to host some of any sorts of things related to that on our site, be that maybe your streams and anything like that. So stay tuned as that that event shows up, and we can steer people in that direction. We're going to have a couple of changes coming up to our site in the next couple of days. Right now, we're migrating to a new host, so things are a little wonky on the Karnak Life site. But
And we're going to try and amplify what we've been doing more video sets, more articles.
Yeah, just more of everything in general. So
more content. Yeah.
That reminds me, at the end of every episode, we always do have a little tag that I put on the outro that says, if you're interested in writing for us, please send us an email. That's always true, but even more so now than usual, as we're looking to, you know, do more. I'm a teacher. It's the beginning of summer, so I'm going to have more time to do that kind of thing starting, like, next week or starting this week.
We just got done turning on a hospital. And it's slowed down, and now cool. our June is pretty calm, so I'm going to do some more content now, too. So, yeah, absolutely awesome.
Yeah, cool. So we got a lot of stuff in the oven. So I'm excited about that. So looking forward to it, and stay tuned.
100% agree with that.
All right.
Cool. One more thing, I guess.
Yeah.
We want to talk Commander?
Oh, yeah, we could talk Commander. We probably should have done that before all that stuff. But, yeah, let's talk Commander. The last thing is the Commander check-in.
I haven't played much Commander this week or the past 2 weeks. I'm just kind of taking a chill pill from the Commander, just getting frustrated by the Karador deck. No clue what I'm doing, really. Just mad. Can't really get it to work. And I'm just like, you know, F it. I'm done. I'm off it for now. So I just quit playing Commander for a while. I'm gonna play some Modern, play some more different formats, and be a little more chill in my brain.
Yeah.
But like, what?
I've been like just wishing for a green white deck to appear on here because I so badly want to play something green white.
Make a green white deck, dude. Build it. That's what I tried to do with Karador before people were putting up results. Just build a green white deck. If you want my suggestion of like really solid generals, Captain Sisse, always good.
Mm-hmm.
Just because like you have access to this legendary toolbox. But another just solid, good legendary commander is just Gaddick Teague.
Yeah, I thought about Gaddick Teague. What was I going to do? I was going to do Safi Eric's daughter, but I hear that she doesn't function very well online.
So she works, but there's like a weird interface thing. So when you cast your commander, there's like an interface that says when it does this, it goes here.
Yeah.
And so you have to, I'm stupid and haven't figured out the interface yet. Which is the problem, because I'm a big dummy. But if you right-click on it, I think there's, like, when it goes to the graveyard, put it in the graveyard.
Uh-huh.
And if you do that, you can get the combo functions for Safi to work. And then when it goes to exile, put it in the command zone. Just so you can play all the Revelar combos and stuff like that. But there's, like, it's a little trickier. Like, the problem with the Safi combos in green-white is that you don't have a kill conditioner.
Oh, really?
So, like, you do, if you play, like, Altar of Dementia, you can mill them out. But unless they have Emrakul, then you have to, like, mill them out and Tormod script them or something like that.
Oh, that's true. A lot of people have Emrakul.
Yeah. If you do it with, the key is with the Revelar combo, you have to pair it with a good third card. And so, like, that third card you're looking for is something like an Acidic Slime. Or something like that to kill your opponent's lands. Mm-hmm. Or like a Blade Splicer to make infinite 3/3s. Or something that just like affects the game somehow. And so like you can do, if you can do the combo on like your opponent's upkeep, you can use, you can't use Flicker Wisp, never mind. Let's say you can use Flicker Wisp and blink all their lands. Wait, hold on. You can't use Flicker Wisp because you sack Revelar. Revelar comes back for Safi, you get back Safi and Karmogai gets back Flicker Wisp. So you can do it during their upkeep and blink all their lands until your next turn. And so, like, they can't do anything. They have no permanence on their turn. And then it comes back and play. And
that sounds pretty miserable to operate. And then, but...
and then you can attack them for 10 or whatever. And then Safi combo them and blink all their permanents again. And then attack them for 10.
Don't make a mistake, though.
Yeah, please don't make a mistake. But yeah, you can, like, Armageddon them with Acidic Slime. You can blink all their permanents with Flicker Wisp. You can make an infinite Golem army or something like that. With like a Blade Splicer or something. So like there's a bunch of like value creatures that you can do all these different things with that like fit under the 2-2 umbrella or the 2X umbrella. You could blink all their guys with Fiend Hunter. You could like exile all their creatures. So like you have all these things you can do. And then like with Gaddic Teeth, you just lock them out of like Force of Will and Damnation. Like they still have Toxic Deluge. But like if they play any 4 CMC spells, they don't get to cast them. And then when Gaddic Teeth isn't in play from the Safi deck, you can like Armageddon them when you have like a big creature in play. Like you play a Primeval Titan or something, you don't fetch lands and you Armageddon. Like so you have stuff like that. So like the green white deck has a lot of different angles you can take on it. It's just getting the right pieces together.
There like, do you want to play creature combos in that color combination? That's kinda where I'm going with that.
Absolutely. There's a ton of creature combos.
There's basically that's another thing is like maybe just doing like a green, black, white and just running like every creature combo I could think of, you know, like and all the creature combo finders, like the like Birthing Pods and Court of Calling and Collected Company and all that.
Oh, you'd be Caridor.
Caridor would maybe be the guy. So, it's but basically you're frustrated the deck with that, huh?
Yeah, it's basically the deck I'm playing. I just can't get it to work because, like, when you don't piece together a combo, like, what are you doing? Like, what is your deck supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
Is it, like, is it like Mana Dorks and Ramp? Is it a stacks deck? Like getting the right mix of pieces to, like, interact with your opponent is the problem. And so, like, and if you just don't draw the right creatures at the right time, you're just like, well, I'm dead. Okay. Yeah, I like the Mono Black Sidisi deck. It's kind of cute.
So what is this Mono Black Sidisi deck doing?
It's killing you with Buried Alive.
Buried Alive. Is it Phyrexian Devourer, Necrotic Ooze?
And Walking Ballista.
And Walking Ballista. That's it. Of course. Yeah. I was, like, looking at this, like, all right, these spells don't do anything. They're just removal spells. There's got to be some combo in here. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, you just play a giant pile of removal,
yeah,
a pile of tutors. Your general's a tutor.
Yeah,
you tutor up all your combo. Yeah, your general goes and gets Buried Alive, and then you cast it again, and it goes and gets an animate dead, and you're like, all right, I have this Necrotic Ooze. You're dead.
Fine.
Yeah, absolutely fine. Yeah, it's just a bunch of discard and removal, and then like, oh, okay, now you're dead. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Like, I beat one of my opponents that was playing this deck, because he played Corpse Connoisseur to put one of his combo pieces in his graveyard.
Uh-huh.
I untapped, reanimated it, put an Iona into my graveyard, and then reanimated my Iona. Nice. And he died. He died the turn before he could kill me, so. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this deck is sweet. Commander's still fine. I'm off Caridor. I just want to play something else. I just want to play some really busted deck. I might just play Brawly Morph just to like Brawly Morph just to get it over with. Like,
yeah, I don't know. The deck is fun. You got to play it for a little while. It's fun to play.
It's not fun. It's just counter all their stuff.
I know. I like doing it.
Like, I kind of want to play like a blue green combo deck or something like that, or like Palancron.
Do it. You got to be bold.
Yeah, like I'm trying to figure out something that's just like Caridor's not doing it for me. It's not getting the job done. So like,
It's too bad that you can't just play like a mid range deck. You know, you can't just play a deck that does something
like the Sidisi deck is a mid range deck, or the Gitrog monster. That's your mid range deck.
Yeah, but they're just so dirty. You know, like why does it have to be so dirty?
That's what you get when you play competitive commander, man.
I know. I know. There's no way around that. I get it, but.
Yeah,
this is how the world is, isn't it?
Place like destroy all islands, man. That's what you gotta do. You gotta kill all of your opponent's islands.
Yeah.
All right, I have said enough. I think.
All right, me too. I think I'm done for today. So,
all right, sweet.
So we shall close out on that, and we will see you next week. But look for more updates. Look for more information soon. And like I said, stick around for the bumper after the cast. Our contact information is in there. If you're interested in writing or contributing in any way, shape, or form, please email us.
We'll be glad to have you. Yeah.
cardknocklivepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you. See you next time. Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.